crossbar! And it doesn't go in!
Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Oh, 30 to 1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that. The morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR. Football Nation Radio.
Well, they say you should go out at the peak of your powers, Lockie. They say you should leave them wanting more, but even then, Mitch Langerak's international retirement left many of us scratching our heads or indeed shaking our fists at the Socceroos head coach for not preventing this. Our informed goalkeeper who broke the J-League clean sheets record last year has announced he will be stepping away from international duty and won't be a part of the upcoming Socceroos squad in the World Cup qualifiers, which certainly caught me off guard. Josh Parrish here with Lockie Flanagan on a Friday morning, both in the studio for once, which is nice.
Lockie, we were last week as well.
You know, a couple of weeks beforehand, it's been a bit spotty.
Well, look at this guy suddenly just digging me out. Oh, well, we'll be back online next week now. That's a protest. I'll do an online protest. They always work so well.
I was going to say. So Langerak is not an option in goal. What did you make of the news?
Oh, I think, like everyone, I was completely blindsided. All the rhetoric and discussion around Mitch Langerak in the preceding weeks, months, and year, really, even further, has been around how good his J-League form has been, you know, breaking the record for clean sheets, consecutive clean sheets in the division. I think he ended up with 9 in a row or nine games without conceding a goal, which is astronomical. And when you compared and contrasted that to Matt Ryan's middling fortunes, particularly at Brighton, to a lesser extent at Arsenal, because he's frankly, you know, he's played a different role. He hasn't been the starting keeper. Langerak was really firming as a genuine contender for that number one spot, and that was the only discussion that was really happening around him. I don't think anyone, even for a second, stopped to mention, nay, consider that Mitch would take the approach that he has. And I think Australian football, or maybe at the very least Australian football Twitter, collectively raised their eyebrows as they saw that announcement filter through on social media. There was really no other reaction, because there was just at no point anyone stopped to think that maybe Mitch Langerak didn't want to be the Socceroos number one or anything like that.
Well, I wonder about the motivations for this. I mean, obviously there's a pandemic. He's got a young family. I can understand him not wanting to be a part of the squad for a little while, not wanting to travel with, you know, quarantines and all sorts of things going on. But I also wonder whether Graham Arnold has told him he's not in his plans. I mean, he was left out of a squad not too long ago in favour of...
Well, in the World Cup.
Yeah. Well, Russia. I mean, he missed out on the World Cup because Brad Jones had just won a title with Feyenoord. And, you know, Van Marwijk was probably a little biased towards players in the Dutch league. And then squads recently, I mean, he was left out in favour of Andrew Redmayne, which I feels like Arnie playing favourites to me. Mitch Langerak is a far better goalkeeper than Andrew Redmayne, no matter the form lines or anything. He's just better, and I think his career, a successful career in Europe and in Asia, bears that out.
Yeah, we don't know what the reasons are for absolute certain, but I don't think anyone is looking at this and holding Mitch Langerak's decision in any way against him. No one's questioning his desire or anything like that. Whether it is if it's a safety thing, I think everyone sort of understands and accepts that that's a completely reasonable route to take in the context of global events. I hate saying that phrase so much. There's no good phrases anymore to say about like a pandemic. We just run out of things. Like I used to love the word unprecedented, but I've become so bored with it. Anyway, that's sort of...
Maybe we should just call it the big C.
That's off to the side of what I'm trying to say. I mean, the Arnold stuff is speculation, but he has, as you said, has been left out of squads in the past. And the weirdest part about it all is if he has been tapped on the shoulder by Graham Arnold and sort of said, well, you're not part of my plans, I'm going to go a different direction with my goalkeeping stocks. And then we see that Andrew Redmayne is included in future internationals, he's not been that good this season. He's made quite a few errors.
Comfortably his worst season since he moved to Sydney.
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of time watching Andrew Redmayne over the years. Yeah,
the bad times.
Yeah, sometimes the other bad times. Sometimes maybe good, and in the past, sometimes maybe
not
maybe
so good.
Maybe not so good. And when I see the old flashes of, dare I say it, Melbourne Heart, Andrew Redmayne pop up now and again, that gives me massive cause for concern. And if he is being selected ahead of a keeper who, I don't need to mention it again, but I will, kept 9 consecutive clean sheets in the J-League, that would be quite shocking.
I just don't understand why he hasn't been considered for Oli Roux's selection as one of the overage players. Because he's already in Japan. I mean, surely you can turn that down.
I guess kind of makes sense. You want to give the faith to the young players and prove what they do. Graham Arnold has kind of said that is his intention, to sort of avoid leaning too heavily on those overage players.
And there is a fixture congestion. Obviously, the A-League clubs have been promised that their Oli Roux won't be taken away from finals duty in preparation for the tournament. So there's been some concessions made there. I think goalkeeper was a weak point in the qualifiers. I mean, Tom Glover was, I thought, very poor in those matches in Vietnam, was it? Or Southeast Asia somewhere.
Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but that whether or not that's enough to tempt Graham Arnold to stop giving those young players a chance, I don't think so. That's not really been his modus operandi, and I don't expect it to change. And Tom Glover has had less of those mishaps.
Did you see what he did last night?
I must have missed that.
He passed the ball straight to Craig Goodwin about 6 yards out, and luckily he hit it hard enough that it ballooned off Craig Goodwin's foot and over the crossbar.
Actually, I did see that at the halftime highlights.
I think Adam Peacock just went, Glover, what?
I like that. I must say, I've been enjoying Adam Peacock's commentary a lot more as time has gone on.
I think he's tapped into a certain kind of Twitter sphere. Adam Peacock has this kind of everyman appeal that other Fox Sports commentators maybe don't.
not that they'll ever know, because they can't see your tweets or opinions.
No.
So that's fine.
Anyway.
Sardine saying, look, it's pretty simple. He saves them to the left. He saves them to the right. Adam Federici, he saves them all night. Well, we could do worse.
I think there would be more forward-thinking moves. Maybe a James Delianoff, who had an excellent game against City, despite conceding 4, made a couple of brilliant stops. Even his club teammate Joe Gauchy has been very, very good.
It's pretty crazy how well both of those young keepers have performed in different games.
We've got good goalkeeping stocks in the A-League at the moment, despite some high-profile departures overseas.
Well, maybe in defence, this is rare that you hear me say this, Josh, but maybe in defence of Graham Arnold, he's thinking about giving one of those promising young keepers, of which there are quite a few in the A-League at the moment, a chance to sort of sit on the bench and be the third keeper or even the reserve keeper at a senior level, which I wouldn't hate. I would prefer that to Andrew Redmayne being given a start.
Based on recent form.
But goalkeeping errors you can forgive in a young player. To give them a taste of senior football, there's a motivator there. There's sort of a root cause behind it. Andrew Redmayne is a far older keeper, still making similar uncharacteristic errors that a Tom Glover has made in the past. Delianov made a few at the start of the season as well. But he's not necessarily getting that fire lit under him by being brought into the Socceroos fold. It's a different kettle of fish if it was a young player. So I think with respect to whether Graham Arnold has made a conscious decision of telling Langrack ahead of time that he's not going to be considered, I think the reason or the motivations behind that we will only know once the squads get decided. If we see Andrew Redmayne, maybe the eyebrows will raise even further. If we see someone else altogether, the eyebrows will raise, albeit in a different way. But if we see a young keeper, maybe I could understand that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see. Lots of rumours floating around about this upcoming Socceroos squad. We haven't had one to talk about in so long, so I'm quite excited, actually. But 34-year-old Nikita Rukavica is reportedly in line for a return alongside James Holland, 31 years old, has been doing some excellent things in Austria. He's really made a mark over there. playing a very specific style of football, I would say, but playing Europa League games against high-profile opposition, big matches, playing a really disciplined physical style of football with his club side there. He's also their long throw specialist, which I know Graham Arnold will like.
Come on. Now it makes sense.
Mitch Duke, get it on his noggin.
Yeah. Well, another interesting suggestion coming through in the Twitch chat is that Lawrence Thomas is also playing fairly
I mean, he was absolutely killing it in Denmark at the very beginning. I think his side, if I remember, Sunder Jyske, has fallen away a little bit in the title race that they were unexpectedly involved in.
He's still playing, I think he's played something in the region of, I think it's 20-plus games this season in Denmark. So that's very, at the very least, cause for a spot in the as a backup, perhaps, as a number two.
Yeah, he didn't seem to have started in the last game, but it was a 4-0 loss, so maybe better that he wasn't associated with
that's
that.
That's why.
Mile Jusinic came off the bench, though, against his side for Randers. The things you learn. But they're not in the... Denmark is one of those leagues that splits up into halves. Halfway through the season, and then there's a relegation playoff and a championship playoff, which we know all the best leagues in the world follow that model. Lucky.
I can think of one. well, no, it's not the best league in the world. It's not the best league in the world.
It's the second best.
It's the worst league in the world until Hearts are back in it. That's the best. So right. Next year it'll be the best.
Does the Scottish Championship do the half and half?
No, I don't think they do.
Interesting.
I don't really pay attention because the only spot that really has mattered all season for Hearts has been one. They've sort of just been there and stayed there, and they're not staying there anymore because they're going up. So, yeah, the boys.
Heart of Midlothian being Lockie Flanagan's team. But they're second out of six in the relegation playoff, so they're not going down, Lawrence Thomas's team. But, yeah, really good shout for a Socceroos spot for him. I think as good as ever. I kind of ruled him out of the race because of the presence of Mitch Langerak. And also, by the same token, I wasn't as worried by Matt Ryan's struggles earlier this year at Brighton due to the presence of that. But I guess Matt Ryan, given he's made a few starts for Arsenal and has done quite well, you'd imagine he's put himself back in the frame for Socceroos' number one selection. He's pretty much nailed on, I would imagine.
I mean, even from Arsenal fans, there are murmurings of, let's swap him for Leno on a more regular basis.
Why are Arsenal so enamoured with Bernd Leno?
Enamoured? I don't think they are enamoured.
Well, they got rid of Emi Martinez to keep Leno as number one.
That was an L.
Big fat
keep
L.
Keep it real with you. That was an L. I'm not sure. I think that adoration has actually waned this season as he's made few more frustrating errors. I really like him as a shot stopper, but I concede that he does have his limitations, and I think
don't concede when you're talking about goalkeepers.
I think he's up against as well. Sometimes the playing out from the back system perhaps makes him look even worse than he is in some moments because the back four that is in front of him just crumble under any sign of a high press.
Yeah.
Which is only so easy.
No, but I just don't think he's reliable as Matty, honestly.
Yeah, I mean...
Arsenal want reliability. They don't have consistency in their lives, Gunner supporters.
I mean, I asked this of you, Josh.
Leno has a higher ceiling on his day. I think I've seen him play games where he's been unbeatable. But
With the case of Arsenal, do they really have anything left to lose? Do they really? There's surely nothing left.
You have nothing to lose but your chains, Arsenal.
Your chains, yeah, that's true. That is true. But Rukavica as well. I'm glad we've been championing his cause for a long time on this show. I remember at home with FNR broadcasts, and even earlier on Aussies Abroad, that old chestnut. Shout out to Damien Davies. We were talking about him as far back as late 2019,
yep.
Early 2020. So,
albeit I mocked those suggestions, but
I didn't.
Going.
I was on board.
I thought it was just a brief purple patch, and he'd scored a few tap-ins and penalties in Israel. He's scored something like 40 goals over the last couple of years.
Been mugged off, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay to be wrong. That's the moral of our shows. Is that sometimes we do get it wrong, And that's okay. That's all right. It's all part of the learning process. But I think he should definitely be involved, and I'm very pleased to see it finally come together.
Absolutely. Well, that's our soccer chat. Oh, well, there's one more tidbit from this piece in the World Game.
Oh, yes.
God rest its impending soul. But it's nice to have it around. Oof. For the time being. And there was one whisper that Ryan McGowan might be recalled to the frame. I mean, he hasn't played a Socceroos game ever since he started all three group games in 2014. That's a pretty sharp fall off.
Well, forever, that's true.
I'd rather Ryan than Dylan. Let me put it that way.
What about Ryan Dylan? Could he ever run? Oh, sorry, Dylan Ryan. My bad. Easy mistake to make.
That's his hapless right-footed evil twin.
See, this is one of those moments where, as a broadcaster, you're supposed to present yourself as a neutral. But it's one of those situations where my loyalties are really, mm-hmm. really caught here, because we were talking about...
Isn't he a former Midlothian boy?
He is. He's won silverware with Hearts in days gone by. Also,
nice to bring a bit of balance with Martin Boyle and Jackson Irvine surely getting a
also, yes,
call
but
up.
Exactly. We need some Edinburgh competitiveness to that end. Dylan McGowan can come in as well. But... Oh, Bozanic as well while he's at it.
Yeah, maybe Ben Garuccio.
I wouldn't say no. I really have enjoyed watching Ollie Bozanic this season. I wouldn't say no.
Are there any other Aussies who've played for Hearts?
Yeah, there's a few. We can get into this. Okay. That I actually have quite an extensive list. Oh, there was one season where there was like five playing for the team, but only a few years back. But anyway, that's a story for off air. I'm sure not as many people listening to us are as interested in Scottish football as I am. But he also...
Almost none of them, perhaps.
Yeah, it's quite possible. The other reason I have a soft spot for Ryan McGowan is that in those games that he did start for the Socceroos in 2018, he set up one of, if not the best goal of Socceroos history and the entire tournament.
Yeah. Socceroos history. Ooh.
I mean, I don't have many other... I mean, maybe for pure quality, not for contextual...
Yeah.
Not on a contextual basis, I think. There are others who would claim that honour.
Mm-hmm.
But... In terms of sheer, like, spine-tingling brilliance, I think it's right up there.
I'm trying to think.
It's also, but to be fair, I am biased by the fact that I am.
Charlie Yankos?
That's true. That was the free kick from considerable distance.
Almost halfway, yeah.
Yeah. See, I didn't see that one live, though.
No. It doesn't have the same resonance. But I'm trying to think. Socceroos history, that's a big shout.
Yeah, no, it is a big
shout. I mean, I'm sure Ray Bart's smashed in a few ridiculous bangers that weren't caught on camera.
Josh, like I said just minutes earlier, it is okay to be wrong. And if this is the hill that I die on, Tim Cahill's thunder bleep onto the underside of the crossbar against the Netherlands, that's, you know, I'm okay with lying and
You're
dying.
Probably right. I mean, it's hard to beat a volley caught off like a 30-yard
unless
cross field
Robin
ball off
Van Persie and you're really good at hitting the ball with your forehead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think Tim Cahill's goal is better than the Flying Dutchman.
Anyway, on a serious note, as much as I have very, very big sentimentality towards Ryan McGowan, he should not be on the plane.
No. Not this year.
I don't think his form this year is good enough to grant him entry.
I also think he's been made to look good by Alex Wilkinson. I'd rather see Wilco in the squad than Ryan McGowan, in all honesty.
I don't disagree with you. Man, I have a lot of as much as I was disappointed that he ended up moving to Sydney a few years back now. Man, I have respect for that guy. He is a colossus.
Mm-hmm.
He is so good.
He's been, I think, the linchpin of Sydney's title success. He and Ninkovic, those are the two pillars on which their dominance has been built. And
yeah.
I think he's a bit underrated. But Mitch Langerak finishing his Socceroos career with 8 caps. Travesty.
That makes me so angry.
I remember when I was going to Melbourne Victory games circa, I can't remember what year, to be honest. But it was back when they were playing all their games at Telstra Dome, so that dates it in some capacity. Anyway, there was a period of time where Glenn Moss was playing for Melbourne Victory. I don't know if anyone remembers this, but he had the most disastrous spell of almost any goalkeeper that I've seen in whatever goalkeeper strip was accompanying Navy Blue. And I started referring to him as Butterfingers. And one time he went off, Langerak came on. I don't know if it was a red card, I think it was, maybe. And he was unbelievable. And I kept calling for Glenn Moss to be dropped and Langerak to come in, because this debutant just wowed me with his one appearance like the previous season. And then lo and behold, Mitch Langerak. You know, I'm sure there are other people who called it earlier in his South Melbourne days or what have you, but he was quite the talent on his day. And yeah, honestly, it still is his day. So I hope people keep paying attention to what he's been doing with Nagoya in Japan, because it is unbelievable what he's accomplished over there. And I don't think, you know, as soon as a player retires from the national team, they should just slip from our consciousness because they can't help us anymore. You know, I think it's always fun to watch out for the Aussies overseas and seeing them put Australian football on the map, which Mitch Langerak has been doing, and we salute him and hope maybe a future national team coach can tempt him out of the wilderness. But we'll take a short break. On the other side, we've got some council meetings to talk about, which will be very exciting for everybody. These are football themed and ridiculous. I think some people may have seen a clip in the Twitter sphere from Moonee Valley. We'll have a little chat about that.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Well, nothing unites our sport like a common enemy, and much of Soccer Twitter found one in a Moonee Valley city councillor who will remain unnamed for us.
Yeah, I don't think we need to incite any more of a pile-on than already exists.
But if people don't know what's going on with the Essendon Royals, it is quite a sham. They're trying to push them off their historic home of Ormond Park. They already don't have enough space for their junior teams. They have to turn players away to clubs in sometimes other municipalities. The football in Moonee Valley is really, really struggling to find space for all the kids.
Yeah, but not there. Like, that's the thing to stress. Not struggling in the same way other realms of football are in Australia.
Demand is high. Demand is high.
Struggling to find space for those numbers.
Demand is high, supply is low. And we wonder why football is so expensive to play at junior level.
It's just not good capitalism.
No.
It's not good capitalism.
Well, I guess some would argue it is good capitalism.
Well, no, actually, that's true. Well, all good. No, no,
good for the capitalists.
There's no good capitalism, but that's a different podcast.
All right, Mr. Bolshevik over here.
I
notice you're wearing red today.
I am in red.
But this city councillor was clipped up from a meeting, which are majority live streamed these days. So she was caught in 480 pixels, not 4K, unfortunately. They don't have the budget for that kind of thing. Comparing the A-League's dwindling attendances to the health of grassroots football, which
And then
anyone with a momentary like glance at the figures would know that those two things are fundamentally unconnected, and we wish they were more connected.
Well, what was even less connected?
The causal relationship goes in the other direction.
Yeah, what was even less connected than any of that was references made as well to the European Super League.
Yeah,
there's all this turmoil.
Well, she just said what's going on in Europe, which I don't know what she meant by that. Maybe she meant the Manchester United protest.
I think it was a reference
to the Super League,
because there was reference made to the instability of leagues and all that sort of stuff. But there are many things that I struggle to suffer in life,
mm-hmm.
and whataboutism in arguments is one of the biggest. And whataboutism is basically taking an argument that exists and completely twisting it to make the argument about something else that's not really related to the initial issue.
It's totally derailing it.
And comments like the ones that we can hear from this particular councillor are so, so unhelpful and so far wide of the mark in terms of actually addressing the crux of the issue. And all they really do is expose, not the council at large necessarily, because we haven't heard from all of them, but this particular council member's ignorance to the way football actually works in this country. Anyone who thinks that there's a direct correlation between A-League attendance and player participation and thinks that those two hinge on one another completely does not understand the statistics of the sport in the state or in the country even.
Mm.
That is immediately how you separate someone who knows what they're talking about from someone who doesn't in this context. If you think there's any relation between those two things, you do not know what you're talking about, because it's the biggest participation sport in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have taken a genius to work out that that doesn't have a link to the one of the least populated professional sports in the country, in mm-hmm. the A-League.
Yeah, and I don't think Melbourne Victory being crap and nobody wanting to watch them really has any bearing, just logically speaking, even removing from the facts and figures, which may or may not have been examined by said councillor. I don't think Melbourne Victory being crap and nobody wanting to watch them anymore has any bearing on whether kids want to play soccer on the weekend. Like, it just doesn't make any logical sense. It's the grassroots game that will hopefully eventually grow the professional game and the attendances
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily...
Not the other way around.
It doesn't necessarily work in the opposite direction. And what was interesting about this is that this video obviously did the rounds on the Twitterverse and prompted a reply from some big names, not least Melbourne City captain Scott Jamieson, an mm-hmm. Ascot Vale resident, no less. And in this Twitter exchange, the council member sort of doubled down. Doubled down on their argument and said, was accused of saying, well, why use professional sport overseas? She was asked the question, why use professional sport overseas to justify what should happen with grassroots? And mm-hmm. the reply was something to the effect of, well, the more kids can watch, the more they'll want to play. If things overseas turned ugly and kids switched off, the less they may want to play here. Now, I don't think how much... I wonder how much geopolitical understanding and corporate understanding young children, who are currently, some of mm-hmm. whom are being denied the right to or access to play where they want to play, understand the backroom dealings of these sorts of things.
Honestly, if I was 7 years old, I'd probably be in favour of the Super League.
Because you probably wouldn't understand.
Real Madrid playing Liverpool every second week?
Yeah,
sign me up.
You're naive. You don't understand the wider implications. Mm-hmm. So that just completely falls flat on its feet for no other reason, or you don't need more reasons than this, but running out of football to watch. The more kids can watch, the more they'll want to play. Well, there's it doesn't matter if the top five leagues in Europe are having a tete-a-tete at the moment and Premier League Cups are struggling. There's oodles of football to be watching everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most ubiquitous sport in the world. It's like it could not be harder. It could not be easier to watch a game of football. There is just so much of it all the time. But one of the other points that gets made is... The response to Scott Jamieson is that facilities have been built for football, and this is kind of the key defence that's raised here. We've built new facilities at Fairbairn, Cross Keys, Strathnava and Debney's Park within the past few years. So the point is being made that new football facilities are being built in the idea that strengthens the argumentative position.
Mm-hmm.
150, one of the comments here says that 150 players or juniors have had to be turned back by the Essendon Royals
uh-huh.
because of a facilities shortage. So if anything, I think this works against the argument being made by the council, the councillor in question. Mm-hmm. Because if multiple facilities have been built in the past few years and still we are turning back over 100 juniors in one club, Not in a league, in one club, 150 juniors being turned away. That doesn't speak to the fact that, oh, well, we've addressed the issue. Oh, it just shows how far back we were and how far we have still to come. So I don't think that argument holds water at all. If anything, I think it speaks to just how bad and how lacking soccer in this state in particular, Victoria, has been in terms of shortage of facilities. This is not a new issue.
No, and the turning away of junior players is not new as well. They've got a waiting list of about 60 parents waiting to hear about availabilities over the next year or two. There was a record high participation rate in 2017 in the municipality of 1,601 players, but it fell subsequently. Despite nearly a 200% growth in women's football in the council area between 2015 and 2019, their overall participation rate fell because Essendon United, which is another club nearby, which uses these shared facilities that are having, you know, access cut, was forced to give up 15 junior teams to a team just across the council border because they couldn't accommodate them. 15 junior teams, they had to say, oh, Meadow Park, you got to have these because we don't have the space.
Yeah.
So it's a crisis, and Football Victoria said we need 200 new pitches in the next 5 to 10 years.
2030.
Yeah, in the next 10 years.
Yvonne's saying 240 more pitches in the next 10 years.
Yeah. It depends how many of them are grass and how many are synthetic, because you can use synthetic pitches a lot more. So there's a bit of flexibility in those numbers, but it's still a lot. Any way you slice it.
And the thing is, clubs who are having to turn back players can't just keep handballing them to other clubs who do have availabilities and do have the space, because it's like when you've got a full bucket of water and you think, you know, there's a drip in the ceiling. You've got a full bucket of water and your solution is to just pour the water you've got into another bucket. Well, that's great. You've abated the problem for the short term. But what happens when the bucket underneath fills up?
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got two full buckets.
Yeah.
And you've got no, you've run out of buckets. You don't have time to get to the shops because the bathroom floor is about to flood. How long until we get that flood? Because this, you know, your formative years are the time where you build certain traditions and certain loyalties. And if we're complaining about players not feeling connected to the local game or not feeling connected to the local league more specifically, well, it's the sports you grow up playing that you usually connect to. Now, I started out playing Aussie rules until about 10 or 11, and I switched. But that's the exception rather than the rule.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my friends that I played Aussie rules with growing up have played every single year since then. And I'm sure that a lot of people who have grown up playing soccer are the same. They've started as a junior and gone all the way through, and they support the game now, maybe locally, maybe internationally as well, maybe both. If those people can't play that sport, they're turned on to something else. If they're told they can't play because there isn't space for them to do so, to play soccer if they want to or if their parents want to, that doesn't really matter. But that's where the habit's formed. If they're told, well, you can't play here, they're just going to go to another sport. And if they play that sport year on year, if they go and play rugby or lacrosse or Australian rules, it is far more likely that they will stay and stick with that sport. So at some point when you run out of room, this sort of behavior and approach will have a negative effect
mm-hmm.
on the uptake of football in the country.
Well, it already has. I mean, you're talking about history repeating itself, and this is going back a long way. But if you listen to what Ian Slyson and Paul Mavridis have been discussing on the History Show, one of the primary themes is that during the First World War, soccer had a huge enlistment of players in the war effort, and soccer leagues across Australia ceased operations during that time because they felt it was their patriotic duty or whatever. But Aussie rules and rugby league, continued during the First World War. And they basically soaked up all of the facilities that were available, all the sporting facilities in that time. So when 4 years later, soccer eventually resumed in Australia, they had very few places to play, and the clubs, the senior teams, were depleted by those who'd been lost. So that's basically what set football back so far. It's the reason that football was not the number one sport in Australia, because it was before that. It was right on par with other football codes. So, you know, this battle for space is really, really significant for the long-term future of the game. It's not just about whether a few kids can register for Essendon Royals or not.
Yeah. E. Al Jung in the comment section saying, well, in the Twitch comment section, I should give the official name and give it a proper plug. Basically, we don't have enough influence in the corridors of power in all forms of government. How can you fix that? Make noise. make a lot of noise. The Moonee Valley petition, the Essendon Royals petition, has just ticked over 1,500 signatures. We want to get more than that. So if you can find that petition online on Twitter, I'm sure it's readily available. Sign up. If you really care about these things, make as much noise and as much hassle as you possibly can. We've seen how it's worked to the benefit of people who have opposed football facilities in the past. When Footscray Park was in the pipeline at a council level, it was halted by a community of individuals who made a lot of noise, kicked up a stink, and eventually were able to get the council to decide in their favour. Now, that's more difficult for, some would say, our sport to do, but you'll never get anywhere close to succeeding if you don't at least try. So if you really care about these things, if you really want to try and fix that, activism. Make as much noise and trouble as you possibly can about
these things.
Write
to your local member.
Because it is the only way and the only chance, even if it's a slim chance, that we have as a sport to affect change of any description.
Well, I've just seen that petition dropped in the comments on the Twitch. So make sure you go up and sign that petition and in solidarity with these teams in Moonee Valley that are having to deal with this totally incompetent council. And, you know, there's something Chris Nicku said to me on Friday night at Summer Street when there was a Melbourne Knights event there. He said, one of our game's shortcomings has been presenting a united voice to government. And that's not just in terms of having the savvy of knowing how to approach government for grants and certain things, but also there's been a lot of overlap in sort of funding requests and we haven't had a coordinated approach. So it is also something for the governing body to deal with in terms of helping clubs negotiate with council and filtering down the strategy to the state federations and so forth. Mm. But Lockie, it's been a very serious discussion and I think we should take a break and come back with something entirely frivolous. So
yeah,
prepare yourself. Because I'm about to give you my Premier League Team of the Year.
Oh, no.
Off the crossbar! And it doesn't go in! Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Oh, 30-1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that. The morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR. Football Nation Radio.
Josh Parrish and Lockie Flanagan here with you this Friday morning. And Lockie, we had some Premier League action at Old Trafford with Liverpool versus Manchester United finally taking place despite the efforts of some passionate anti-Glazer supporters who successfully delayed the game from a couple of weekends ago. But
see? Activism.
Yeah. But United was prepared this time. They beefed up security. They put a 10-metre-high temporary wall in front of one of the entrances where the supporters gained access to the stadium last time. And, most importantly, the players are known to stay at a particular hotel the night before home games, which is really weird to me, but anyway. Basically bring them into kind of like... I mean, maybe it's part of the COVID protocols. I don't know. Maybe it's just obsessive match preparation.
It's part of the culture.
Yes, but... instead of leaving at their usual time, they arrived at the stadium 8 hours before kickoff, and the Old Trafford staff reconfigured a bunch of the corporate boxes and put beds in them so the players could sleep, have a nap before the game. So they were there way earlier than any of the protesters, and Liverpool managed to get out of an attempted blockade, and the game went ahead. Unfortunately, all the preparation did Manchester United no good and they succumbed 4-2 to Jurgen Klopp's resurgent side. And it puts them within touching distance of Chelsea in the race for top four. It's only 4 points the gap with Liverpool having a game in hand. It might go right down to the wire with Chelsea preparing for a Champions League final.
Yeah, well, will the Premier League get 5 Champions League spots this year?
Yes.
Yeah. So will it still be
actually,
a massive wire effort? Maybe if you throw West Ham into the mix as well, perhaps.
You're actually... I can't remember whether it's 5 or not, depending on... there's 2 English teams in the final.
So would they get an automatic spot and then it's,
it
goes
down? I think it goes to 5, yeah. Oh, it depends if Manchester United wins the Europa League or not.
Yes. We're going to have to dig into that. We'll have to find out what the case is there. In any case, it will still be an exciting race for the top four. Whether or not it means Champions League or not is a different question altogether.
No, that's a very good point you bring
it,
up.
I'm wondering if that's... I have a feeling they might have changed the rule because I recall Tottenham not getting... Back in the day, Tottenham not getting a Champions League place because Chelsea from outside, who were in fourth, because Chelsea in 2012 won the Champions League from outside the top four.
Yes.
And so Tottenham lost their spot.
But I think that it changed. I feel like the rules changed after that, which is very Spursy.
Yeah, no, I feel like the rules did change after that as well. I'm just not sure which direction.
But anyway, it looked like it was all over for Liverpool, and now it's very much not.
Yeah.
But it looks as if Brendan Rodgers will be in there as well, which is just as well.
That's cool.
Given his habit of getting to 70 points and then freezing.
Yeah, it's
in place.
It seems as though it's finally locked in, which is great. Like many, have an immense soft spot for Leicester. So
for Brendan Rodgers?
No, not for Brendan Rodgers specifically, but for the team he manages. They've got so many players with very redeemable qualities.
Nothing amuses me more than like a glowing Brendan Rodgers profile in like a Sunday supplement.
I mean, I do enjoy Brendan Rodgers in some ways, just not necessarily as a manager person.
I like his kind of David Brent shtick.
As an individual who gives me points of discussion to talk about both on air and with my football supporting friends, I absolutely love him. But just going back to the measures put in place by Manchester United to avoid a second coming of fan protests, putting up the walls, going 8 hours early, sleeping players in corporate boxes, it is just routinely mind-boggling to me to the point where I don't even know if I should be surprised by anything anymore. The lengths to which these big clubs will go to avoid making any direct kind of change or having direct dialogue with their actual fans. Like, nah, rather than listening to the supporter base, it would just be easier for us to erect a 10-foot wall, completely play a switcheroo on all our players, sleep them in corporate boxes overnight just to avoid making some actual change.
Yeah.
It's just so material. It's so superficial.
Especially after Joel Glazer.
I really
Glazer.
Have to cover up this red shirt. My politics are really showing at the moment.
Especially after all Joel Glazer's platitudes, in the wake of the protest. But according to The Athletic, they were worried about a points deduction because apparently, do you remember back a couple of years ago, the bomb scare at the Bournemouth game? Do you remember this? It turned out to be totally...
it's going to make a very inappropriate joke about Phil Jones there.
Yeah, it turned out to be a total false alarm. Yeah. But the game was called off on the last day of the season. I think it was in Jose Mourinho's last full season at the club.
I don't remember this, in all honesty.
I believe. Anyway, it was a while ago, but apparently they were given a warning by the Premier League that if matches were called off, again, they could face further punishment. And then there was the Old Trafford riot. So apparently if it happened again, they could face sanction for not securing the ground properly. So they're a little worried.
The Premier League is an entity frustrating me.
Yeah, look, they're...
So much. They just do so much enabling. Like, they tried to paint themselves as the hero and this steadfast opponent to the European Super League. Like, come on. Well, you're completely doing this to serve your own interests.
You know
no
who
one
else,
thinks otherwise.
You know who else likes to paint themselves as a hero is Brendan Rodgers. This is this is the opening paragraph from this Sunday Times profile. Confident, inspiring, and sensitive. The second coming of Brendan Rodgers.
Written by Brendan Rodgers?
Written by Jonathan Northcroft.
Oh, okay. I thought this might have been a Players Tribune article.
I just want to read you the first paragraph.
Oh, please.
One of the first meetings Brendan Rodgers held at Leicester City involved the club's cleaners. A corridor at the old training ground, Belvoir Drive, was partially blocked by a pile of boxes. Rodgers told the cleaners, "Your role is vital at this football club. It is you who look after the environment we work in. If you could find some way to move those boxes, it would be incredible."
Incroyable.
The cleaners were delighted. They had long wanted to clear the corridor, but were told the boxes were important. "Do what you feel necessary," Rodgers said. "If anyone complains, send them to me."
So, sorry, who was
the cleaners felt 10 feet tall.
Who was the writer of this article again?
Northcroft. Jonathan Northcroft.
Jonathan Northcroft. That's definitely a burner journalist name for Brendan Rodgers. He absolutely ghost wrote that. Or refuse to believe otherwise.
I mean, if you want to make the cleaners feel good, like invite them for a kick around with some of the players or something. Like, no, just tell them that, oh, actually this back-breaking labour is all yours.
See, if I was a cleaner, I would actually find that really condescending.
It would be incredible.
Your job
if
is
if you could move
so
those boxes, it would be incredible.
It would be incredible. I would just feel demeaned. Like, well, I was going to do it anyway.
I mean, we've all
but
had
now
that
you've patronized, I would not do that. If I was a cleaner, I wouldn't, and this gives you an insight into what kind of worker I am. If I was told to do something like that in that way, I just wouldn't do it out of spite. Like, no, sod you. Don't talk down to me. I was going to do it anyway, but
I mean,
now
I'm sure you've experienced this in your hospitality role,
yes.
Lockie, but we've all had that moment talking to a sort of a service worker who's serving us and trying to be polite and going over the top, and then it sounds incredibly condescending.
Yeah, I think I do actually inadvertently feel guilty of that.
Mm. So maybe that's all that was going on here, but I feel like as the centerpiece of a profile, it's a little window into the soul of Brendan Rodgers.
It is. Strange.
Man. One other thing that caught my eye from the Premier League over the past week was the Monday Night Football teams of the season, which they announced with four games to go. Apparently, I guess it's all wrapped up. You know, City's won. What can you do? But Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher like to debate these things. I do like when Carragher starts talking about it, because he really puts a lot of thought into the way the team's actually going to perform and operate. And then Gary Neville tends to make fun of him and saying you should just pick the 11 best players. But by that logic, Gary, why are you picking Edouard Mendy? Why are you bothering with a goalkeeper at all and leaving Salah out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's got to make some kind of cohesive sense as a team. How far you go with that is up to you, I suppose. But I thought, despite how much I respect both these pundits, their selections are absolutely incredible. Not in a good way.
Oh.
Not in a, if you move these boxes, no. It would be incredible. As in, that is
incredibly.
I'm astonished.
Yeah, okay.
So Jamie Carragher has gone for Martinez in goal, Kufal, Stones, Ruben Dias, and Luke Shaw, which is, I don't mind the back line. In midfield, De Bruyne, Kante, and Bruno Fernandes. And up front, Harry Kane, Heung-Min Son, and Phil Foden.
I feel like that's a flavor of the month kind of pick there.
Yeah, I feel like this is a... But then again, he's gone with two players who really lit up the start of the season. So he clearly has some memory of what happened a few months ago. Gary Neville's gone with Mendy between the sticks. Kyle Walker...
Oh, even Mendy. Oh, you meant Benjamin Mendy in defense. I was like, yes, interesting.
Kyle Walker at right back, which I found astonishing. I mean, he's not even the best right back in Manchester City.
Yeah.
Not in the Premier League.
Yeah. It's not even the best drummer.
Ruben Dias at centre back, which is nailed on. Harry Maguire, Luke Shaw, De Bruyne, Fernandes, Gundogan. No, I don't mind the midfield. Kane, Rashford, and Phil Foden.
Yeah, that's Gary Neville's team. I mean it in the way that I mean it in a.
There are
a,
four Manchester United players.
Yeah, that's why I say it's Gary Neville's team. I mean it in a dual way. That is the team that he has picked, but we're also seeing Gary Neville's team, the one that he played for, and is quite clearly on the evidence of this 11, a supporter of, just shining through. They'd be like me just putting Thomas Partey for no apparent reason, or any Arsenal player for that matter, in a team of the season this year. Just like there's no disguising here. There's no effort to disguise bias here by any stretch of the imagination. If you picked one of them, who justifiably could be in there, Fernandes, sure, take your pick of those two. Really, I think would be amongst the you know ones to have the most cause for being included. You could get away with it, but so when you pick four and two of those are Maguire and Rashford. Yeah, it starts to become pretty
obvious. Rashford's had a big year, but not really on the pitch. He's had an okay season. It's been good, but not great. Not team of the season.
Yeah, and I don't think he's been hyper-consistent.
I mean, does anybody remember Harry Maguire's opening day of the season?
Yeah.
The turning circle of a fridge against Tottenham Hotspur. Anyway, I've tried my hand because I think...
You're a braver man than I.
I think you got to put your money where your mouth is. So in goals, it was a toss-up for me. One between Elion Melier from Leeds, who's the youngest goalkeeper to keep first goalkeeper under 21 to keep 10 clean sheets since Joe Hart.
Big Melier fan.
So he's the youngest goalkeeper ever to keep 10 clean sheets in the Premier League, playing for Leeds. I mean, the least defensively stable unit in the whole competition.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the Melier bandwagon. Yeah. He made it an uncharacteristic error, I think, to start the season.
Against Liverpool, he was terrible.
Yeah, against Liverpool, I remember. But I remember saying that he'd come good.
So it was a toss-up between him and Nick Pope. And I went for Nick Pope in the end because he has a defence in front of him that's not performed well this season. And I looked at his XG stats, and he was supposed to have conceded 47 goals, and he's actually conceded 35.
Wow.
Which I think is just unbeatable. That is crazy.
That is incredible.
So he's saved 12 goals that he shouldn't have.
That's like Mason Greenwood finishing levels of like overperformance.
That's unbelievable.
That is bonkers. Like I seem to recall.
I hope that statistic was right, because if not, I pick Melier.
I mean, I almost wonder if it is, because I remember a few seasons ago, I can't remember which keeper it was, but 2019-20, someone had saved 7 or should have conceded 7 more goals than they actually did. I can't remember which keeper it was. David De Gea, I think.
Yeah.
It was David De Gea. And that was at the time seen as this ridiculous, like astronomically high figure. To nearly double that is quite
something. I may have to go and check my working, check another source just to make sure that's right, because it's one of those outliers where you go, maybe I've got to retrace my steps
that's
here.
Bonkers.
But anyway, at centre back, Ruben Dias is nailed on, I think.
It's what we call a lock.
Mm. Other centre back I've gone for is Antonio Rudiger, who was left out by Frank Lampard. Suddenly he's picked by Thomas Tuchel, and Chelsea have the best defence in the league.
If for no other reason than it being a big two fingers to Frank Lampard, I support the selection.
Mm. Fair enough.
And in fact, if for no other reason, no, it is my only reason.
It is your only reason. It's mine too. Right back, I think Koufal is a good pick for West Ham.
Yep. I'm happy to always see it.
I would also be happy with Cancelo, because he's the best right back at Manchester City and they won the league.
Doesn't always play right back, but yes. Doesn't necessarily perform the role of a right back, but I guess it doesn't have to be necessarily.
Left back was a toss-up for me between Shaw and Ben Chilwell. Ben Chilwell being dropped from the Chelsea team in recent weeks in favour of Marcus Alonso has led me to lean towards Shaw, who's
that's
a good
one, and that's one you changed, because you did initially have Chilwell.
I did change that one. In midfield, Gundogan has to be there for me. He's just had an unbelievable resurgence with the goal scoring.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know where you put him, but centre midfield is as good as any. He's played lots of different positions this season. Alongside him, I think Thomas Suchek has to be there.
Yeah.
The new Fellaini.
Absolutely willing to support
I mean,
that.
There's got to be some reason why West Ham has had an unbelievable year, and I'm choosing to believe it was Suchek.
You know, it's so weird. I'm always struck by watching Thomas Suchek and, God, you're just such a unique player. And then you've said Marouane Fellaini. I'm like, oh, no, I've seen this before. That's the first time I've thought of it in that way, and I'm like, oh.
Marouane Fellaini, peak Everton Marouane Fellaini.
Yeah, like the good kind. Yeah. And kind of playing for...
Except
it makes sense.
Kind of a different position, though. Fellaini was almost a second striker under Moyes.
Suchek plays a lot
Suchek is
that.
A defensive midfielder for sure, but his corner threat is just unbelievable.
Yeah. No, I like that.
And I love watching that guy because he just gets his big noggin on everything. And delivering that ball to him off the set pieces is going to be Bruno Fernandes. I don't think you can pick De Bruyne this season. Or if you do, I don't think you can pick Bruno because they're not going to function in the same team together.
Yeah,
it's just too much output and not enough input. Two ball hogs who give the ball away 25%
of
the time.
You are one of those people, and I do side with you on this, that like to pick a functional team of the season.
One six, 1 8, 1 10.
Not everyone is like you.
No.
Not everyone is like
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. A lot
Gary
of people
Neville,
like to cheat.
As I can see, is not like you.
Yeah. He's picked three ball players and no grunt. That's why I've got Suchek in there. Bruno Fernandes for me edges out De Bruyne. De Bruyne was out for most of City's title charge. Like, he just didn't play in the crucial parts of the year where they got ahead of the pack. And he's been great since he's come back, but you know, most of his good performances have come in the Champions League. Same with Phil Foden. I don't think you put either of them in there. And up front, Harry Kane, leading the league in goals and assists despite his beleaguered appearance, has to be there. It's a toss-up for me between Son and Jack Grealish, and I'm going to go for Grealish on the left flank. And on the right, Mo Salah has been unbelievable, despite Liverpool's terrible year.
Yeah.
He's second in the goal-scoring charts and is absolutely leading the charge back to Champions League qualification. So I think you got to reward that performance in a much poorer team this season.
Yeah, especially when the other two-thirds of that famous front three have themselves had quite difficult seasons. He's sort of, you know, you would have forgiven them for all dropping given the way Liverpool have functioned collectively, but he's kind of gone the opposite direction to the other two and stood out even more.
Mook says, Suchek was huge for West Ham alongside with Moyes being manager of the year. Yeah, Jung says, they're all new Tim Cahills to me. Yeah, I like it.
Fair enough.
And the forehead is a massive target, says Mook.
It is.
Is he talking about me or? A bit sensitive. But not that anyone asked, there's my Premier League team of the season. And Lockie, before we go today, I think we have to give tomorrow's festivities a big plug.
Yeah. Got a big day.
We do indeed.
At Avenger Park.
Yes, we're going to be at the Reggio Calabria Club, Avenger Park, for the BCNA, Breast Cancer Network Australia fundraiser that Avondale are putting on. They've got a junior clinic at 9 in the morning. The women are playing at 11. We will be streaming that game live, which is really exciting because Avondale's women's team, even though they're in State League 3, are a bit better than State League 3 standard.
They are.
I'm looking forward to seeing them in action.
Yeah, and they I remember it was over a year ago now, but they absolutely walked the State 4 competition. They like scored some seriously impressive, not just individual, but team goals as well from the fleeting footage that we saw. But we've spoken to a lot of people from that dressing room, a lot of the women in that team on various episodes of Avenger Radio, and a lot of really, really nice people.
Yeah, cool.
Genuinely nice to speak to, both on and off air.
And we're going to have a chat to a few of them after the game.
Yep.
We're going to get Simon Hill on the broadcast. He's going to be emceeing the luncheon, so we're going to have a quick chat to him. Johnny Aloisi is going to be there. We're going to try and catch up with him as well. There's some prizes being given out, some signed memorabilia. The whole proceeds of the day go to Breast Cancer Network Australia, which is a cause close to your heart, Lockie, close to Simon Hill's heart as well. And it's just a horrible disease that affects so many Australians. And this is the biggest breast cancer consumer organisation in the country that helps people going through that disease. So really applaud Avondale for putting this on and for thank them for inviting us. And you and I will be sticking around to broadcast on Football Victoria's behalf the top of the table clash between Avondale and South Melbourne in the afternoon.
It's a big 24 hours of football.
Yes.
It's exciting.
And you're going to be up at CB Smith tonight as well.
Yep, that's what I said. Big 24 hours up at CB Smith. Langwarrin versus Pasco Vale Soccer Club. Well, Football Club actually is their official title, PVFC.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be a big
game. They had a big win the other night.
They had a huge win. They won 5-1 against the North Geelong Warriors.
I was actually talking about their win at Moreland City Council, where they finally got Hoskin Reserve redevelopment approved.
Thank you. That was
despite some of the councils receiving death threats from the Dog Walkers.
That was also a huge win. It was probably even more than a 5-1 win. That was more like an 8-1 win in the context. Well, no, maybe even 8-0 because they didn't really stutter. They got what they came for.
Yeah.
And there was no misstep. But funny thing about that 5-1 win against North Geelong, initially Hakeem Alarabi, who did score one goal of those five, was credited with four of them, which is just great. I just love trying to prepare for a game, and Sports TD just
you can
has
save
the
Hakeem,
wrong...
but you can't save from Hakeem.
Well, it's
just unsavable.
The problem was that there were video highlights produced by Pasco Vale of the game, and I could see very clearly that the scorer of the final goal was Attila Offaly, and not in fact Hakeem Alarabi rounding the keeper for his fourth goal of the game. So it was a bit disconcerting, but yeah, that's the joy of some of the live score and ladder websites that operate in Victorian football.
Can I get a prediction for that game, Lockie?
Tonight?
Mm-hmm.
2-2.
2-2.
Goals.
A Desmond.
Pasco Vale has scored 15 already this season. I think they're second. I think only Kingston is higher, who are on a whopping 24. Ridiculous.
I do like a good Desmond.
Yeah, I'm thinking 2-2. I think there'll be goals, and Langwarrin have brought in some interesting new attacking players as well. Luke Gallo.
Yep.
A name I'm sure you'll be
He was the
with.
Young player of the year 2017.
For Berlin. He was the rising star of the NPL. Coming from Mazenod, which is Mazenod FC in the State League, which is interesting to see him end up there. And Slaven Franesevic as well, formerly of Kingston City NPL 2 championship winning fame back in 2016. Loves a free kick from range. So I'm backing one of those two. He nearly scored one against Langwarrin on the opening day for Manningham United. So I'm backing him in to maybe hit a screamer on debut.
Can't wait. That game coming up 7:30 tonight on the Football Victoria CB live Smith. Streams. Lockie Flanagan, Nick DiBarno on the call.
So, what a
dream team. And let's go through the NPL Victoria fixtures. Give me your instant reaction prediction. Let's do this in 3 minutes or less.
Okay.
Port Can Melbourne, do. Green Gully. Very hard one to start with.
Score draw. 3-3.
Port Melbourne have been good at home, though. I'm going to have to think about that one, submit my tips later.
My tips always change from this anyway.
I think draw. All right. Bentley Greens, Melbourne Knights.
God damn it. I don't want to say draw again.
give me Bentley, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. Our Knights have got injuries.
Bit tired, yeah.
Yeah. Big week. Bentley are in form.
All right. Bentley. Greens.
I talked you into it. Eastern Lions, Dandenong City.
City. Yeah? I think they're finally going to do it. I think they're due for it. Yeah.
Eastern Lions have 5 new players.
No. I'm backing in City this week. I just think that their fortunes have to turn at some point. They have been, I'm not saying they've been perfect or a top 4 or even top 6 team by any stretch of the imagination. But there's no doubt in my mind that they are better than a team that has 0 recorded wins across the season. Mm-hmm. They've led a lot of games.
Give me a draw.
Sasha
doesn't get to win.
I'm backing them in. I want them to do it. Not necessarily against Eastern Lions. I'd rather they have a big upset, but I still want them to do it.
I'll leave one for last. I'll leave the best for last. Hume City, Heidelberg.
Burgers.
Yeah, give me Katsakis ball in that one. They were unlucky to draw with St. Albans last week. Katsakis was shattered, but they've dipped into the transfer market as well. 4 new players
for
Heidelberg, including John Roberts.
Yeah, that's,
I'm excited to see in Victoria. Dandenong Thunder, Altona Magic.
Oh, it's got to be Thunder.
Give me Thunder at home every day of the week.
Bernarda and Watson both getting goals.
Noel Bernarda goes pow.
I didn't even know what Bob Brown said in that moment, but I appreciated it nonetheless.
Golazzo. St. Albans versus Oakley Cannons.
Yeah, it's Cannons.
Mm. Even at Churchill Reserve on a Sunday.
Yeah, Cannons. Yeah. Cannons all day.
I agree.
3-0.
And finally, the big one, the big show, Avondale FC, South Melbourne, with yours truly on the call.
This is another difficult one.
It's a doozy. Some tough games to predict this weekend.
Honestly, if I got like an eighth of a tipping point for every time I said, oh, it's a tough one, I'd probably have more tipping points than I have by legitimately trying to tip the league. I want to say Avondale. I want to say Avondale because they drew last week. South have had a pretty congested last week and a half.
Mm.
Obviously, they've had a few days break, full weeks break before the before this game, after the Knights game that they lost. Can South Melbourne lose 2 in a row though? I don't know if I see it happening. I'm going to go for a draw. I think it's the most impressive attacking outfit that I've seen coming up against the best defensive unit so far this season.
The unstoppable force and the immovable object.
I really genuinely feel that they cancel each other out.
I'm going for the Avengers.
Yeah, fair enough. That's
Avondale for the win. I think South are frauds and they will be found out. They're not frauds. They're just boring. Avondale will play the football and karma will win the day.
And South Melbourne will be there also. They'll be there too.
We'll leave it on that note. Thank you all for tuning in on the Twitch, Facebook Live and Twitter. We all know which platform's the best to watch us live, the Twitch. We do appreciate all your contributions and comments throughout the show. We will talk to you again on Monday morning. The full-time Nuts boys will be back.
Saturday. tomorrow.
And indeed, FNR broadcasting live from Avenger Park. From just before 11 a.m. We might even go 10:30 if we can.
Okay.
Get some pre-game interviews in. Depends if John Aloisi wants to talk to us or not.
It's going
to
be an early rise for me in the southeast, but I'm on board.
Yep.
Spirit of football.
We'll talk to you tomorrow from Avenger Park. Stay tuned.
Off the crossbar! And it doesn't go in! Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Oh, 30-1. I don't see you or Robbie on it. Ah!
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that. The morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR, Football Nation Radio.